Hello, everyone. The age of J has ended.
Oh, God.
And the age of I is beginning. Welcome to the Hey Poor podcast. I am your new fresh-faced baby host, I Coleman. With me is Hey Poor player deputy editor. Is that right?
That's
is
correct.
The title right? Jonathan Tressler. And Jay Petrick. Petriquin.
I took a risk there because usually when anyone looks at my name and thinks they can't pronounce it, they immediately go on to pronounce it perfectly and then look at me as if they're guilty, as if they think they've done it wrong. I trusted you with that eye, and you've already failed me.
I did. So for the benefit of our listeners, I literally listened to previous episodes of the Hey Poor podcast.
This is true.
With the specific intent of pronouncing Petriquin correctly.
Petriquin.
And there's practiced doing so. So that would not happen,
man.
And then I choked at the starting line.
You know what? It's fine. This is already the episode of me sort of sliding out, so it's fine. I can be whoever you want me to
your
be.
Name, your last name is being forgotten, sort of Marty McFly style.
Just fed to the void fish, just full
fed
Monty.
To the void fish, yep. And soon your first name will be forgotten.
Oh,
and,
man. But it's a letter of the alphabet.
I will be the...
Yes. That's important.
Speaking of which, yeah, so the last host was J. The current host is I. The
God.
Next host, in a few months, we're going to have H. I hope you're all very excited for that.
Just run all the way backwards. What happens when you get to A, though? You just go into numbers?
Z, it's going to be a problem because you and I will say Z, but Jonathan will say Z.
Oh, shit.
Let's get the guy who played this podcast.
we'll just get the guy who played Lord Zedd in Power Rangers, and it'll all be fine.
Yeah. Did you know that? Do you know who's playing Lord Zedd in the new Power Rangers movie?
I didn't actually know he was in it offhand.
Brian Goddamn Breaking Bad Cranston.
Oh, what the what? Dick?
Wow,
okay.
Okay.
You know, I saw that trailer that came out of New York Comic Con yesterday, and I actually. More interested than I expected to be. Like, I am not hating what I'm seeing of it so far.
That's how
so apparently Bryan Cranston was... So, I know nothing about Power Rangers, but apparently Bryan Cranston was Lord Zedd in at least one of the original shows, and that was how he got his, like, start
really?
In TV.
I never knew that.
So, he asked to do it in the new Power Rangers movie because he wanted to, like...
He wanted to come back to it.
Yeah, he wanted to come back to it. But
I
it's
am
just
the
like,
danger.
Really? You could do any...
I am the one who morphs. Wow. That's great. That's
good
wonderful.
Goof.
That makes me all warm and fuzzy inside.
Okay. So, if you're not familiar, because this is sort of a relaunch, and I know I'm going to be sharing it with a lot of people, so there's good chances your first time listening. Hey Poor Podcast is the... official podcast of gaming website and YouTube channel and media empire. Hey, poor player.
media empire.
Media empire. Yes,
right.
Well, like Brian Cranston, Lord Zedd, we're in the empire business.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to talk about video games, which is something nobody has ever done.
A
for
podcast,
our podcast
about
before.
Video games? Are
yeah.
You mad?
Is that possible?
I don't know. It's untested science we're working with here. Definitely a sort of weird science.
Yeah, I certainly have no idea how one would go about doing
we're
it.
We're
going to
create a 6-foot-tall 80s woman, you know, in a moment.
Oh, goodness. But yeah, like, so this is... Guys, this is weird not being in the host seat. I gotta break character for a second to just share that information. This is
break,
odd.
Break character.
Who are you playing? my actual name is Yaj Neptraquamp. I tried to reverse my last name and it went horribly wrong.
Yaj Neptraquamp, okay.
Yaj Neptraquamp. Start talking like I'm in the red room from friggin' Twin Peaks. Goodness.
The best part of that is that I could have reversed the actual audio, but no. Jay made the sound of reversed audio with his mouth.
I want you to go back in the recording and do that and just reverse it and just play back like right here. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you just heard whatever the hell that sounds like. Enjoy
or maybe
that.
Not. Maybe I just forgot or didn't
you probably
like
will because that's a dumb idea I just had.
putting part of the Doom soundtrack, something like
hey,
that.
Hey, there you go. There you go.
So that's my brand
ah,
now.
Just name dropping it in there.
There you go. Goodness.
What have you guys been playing? What video games have you been playing?
Good lord. I guess I'll use this to give a bit of background on why this is all happening. So, like, in the last month, you know, like, as people who have followed the show for a while will probably know, I have been a college student for a while. I am now a senior in college, and as such, my workload has made it such that I cannot host the show anymore, as sad as I know that is for everyone who has sort of come along and followed us for all this time. But because of that, I also honestly haven't had much time to play games in a while. Because not only am I a senior in college, I'm also the editor-in-chief of my college's newspaper up at SUNY Potsdam. So between those, that's just kind of been my life. What I have been playing, though, is the BioShock Collection, which we sort of talked about a little bit back when it got announced. I am, for anyone who hasn't listened back a little bit, I am a giant fan of the original BioShock. Jonathan, I know you and I sort of came to a disagreement about this a little bit, but personally, I think the first BioShock is by far still the best game in that series. That's just me looking at those games on a technical level and what they all do in terms of gameplay and whatnot, and also just how fun I think they are to explore. BioShock Remastered is really nice. It's really cool. That game holds up really well. Obviously, you can still, like, you know, there's still differences in the way, like, let's just pick a thing. The way, like, character animations and character models look in the original BioShock versus how they do in Infinite or how they do in, you know, like, Doom or any game that came out this year. Even so, though, it holds up really well. The atmosphere of the original BioShock is still intact and remastered beautifully, and that is the number one thing I wanted to make sure, like, if that was ruined in any way, that would just fuck things up for me on a very fundamental level, to be perfectly honest, because atmosphere, I think, is a really big part of what makes the original BioShock complete. But yeah, so I have been really enjoying that. I've only played the first one. I haven't really torn into 2 or Infinite on that collection yet. I got it on PS4, so I'll be sort of digging through those over time. I don't know if anyone else has been hopping into those games yet, into the remasters of those yet.
I will agree.
You guys
want to
know something shameful?
What's that?
They're just gonna hate me.
No, like, go for it.
They're gonna hate me as the host right out the gate. I have not played any of the BioShock games.
Ooh.
Get out. You're fired.
You're horrible. No, I'm kidding. Oh, man. No,
I'll make my own Hey Poor Player with Blackjack.
And hookers. Yeah, I can see, and I know you have a big love for, I know you have a big love for this year's Doom. You're kind of familiar with that series in general, aren't you? Or am I getting that
no,
wrong?
I'm familiar with BioShock. Like, okay. I know all about it. I even know most of the twists, because of course they've, you know, dickheads saying, would you kindly?
Well, I was gonna ask
if
you're...
It just kind of passed me by initially, and I've got the collection. I haven't had any time to play because I've been, like, reviewing things and doing actual work, but...
Yeah.
No, I actually have the collection because I'm going to use that to get into it.
Cool. That's the one thing. Like, I know all these, like, sort of remaster collections that we've gotten in this age of consoles has rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. I think that's the one good thing that can be said for it, really, is that it does help if it's just a thing you hadn't played before. Same reason I think the Nathan Drake collection was really great, because the PS4 has a much bigger install base than the PS3 ever did.
Right. I think that, like, the problem with remastered collections is not necessarily the idea, it's that they are sort of predicated on the fact that most of the new consoles don't have that much backwards compatibility, right?
Yeah.
I think it's not that, like, why are you remastering BioShock? I think it's more people are upset that, like, they can't play their old copies of BioShock that they still own
Well,
their new stuff. Unless you have a PC.
Like, yeah, or still have the old consoles. Like, I still have my 360 and everything. I don't know. I think part of it's also just the nature that it's 3 games in one collection, so they can sort of spin that whole thing of, hey, if you haven't played it, here's all of it in one box.
Right.
Especially since Irrational is, you know, the chances of another BioShock game ever being made are pretty much zilch at this point.
That's probably
for
the best.
As Ken Levine left Irrational and everything. I don't think we would have needed another one. Like, if they felt the need to keep to that same formula, oh, now we're going to put a city in a volcano. Like, where do you go next?
That's brilliant.
Actually, I would totally play that now that I
yeah,
say
no,
that.
That's a great idea.
Tears $250 million, make it.
Hell yeah. But yeah, no, I had actually been going to ask when I was asking that, I've been going to ask if you had played the other Doom games, because like I've heard a few conversations with people where like I feel like if you're the type of person, and this is obviously a generalization that doesn't apply to everyone, but like I've had a lot of conversations with people where I feel like it's almost like there's a couple different kinds of first-person shooters in terms of the way the player is treated within the world. And I think games like Doom are sort of a different type than games like BioShock. So given that I know you've had a lot of fun with that kind of game, I'm curious what you think of BioShock from your perspective. From that, I'll be very curious to hear your thoughts on that as you play through those whenever you get around to it.
Sure, yeah.
Hell yeah.
In coming episodes.
Yeah.
No, I'm an OG Doom fanboy. I have played all of them, all of the expansions, all of the like mods and wads that matter. I have, as I showed in the video, so the video we keep referencing is on the Hey Poor Player YouTube channel. I did a video about why the new Doom soundtrack is so good on the day the new Doom soundtrack came out, and it's kind of exploded, which is a really big pressure for me. So that's why we keep referring to that. Anyway, but like, so as I showed in that video, my room is just like covered in Doom swag from like various eras.
It's a temple. It's a shrine.
It's a shrine to Doom. No, I could. That's what will happen if I can't get like anyone to be on the podcast with me some week. Y'all can experience 2 hours of me talking about just Doom.
Yeah,
but you know, I definitely agree with what you say about there being lots of different kinds of first-person shooters.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing I've noticed is that people will always talk about games being more challenging back in the good old days. But of course, in the original Doom, you could carry 10 guns at once and run at 60 miles an hour, never getting tired. It's a little bit of a change from the modern day.
Yeah, I.
Oh, and you can carry around
Doom
60
itself,
rockets.
Doom is not particularly hard, I think. Although the original Doom game was the challenge of it was very much just like not having enough ammo to deal with the encounters you were presented with. Doom 2 was much kinder with ammo, and then the challenge came from like the encounters themselves and how to deal with different monsters.
Doom 2 was like you just walk around the corner and there'd be a horrible thing that'd set you on fire and then like a door from behind you would open up and a bunch of people would eat you.
Yeah,
just bullshit like that, you know. You know how like most modern games, like, you know, you'll see a bunch of waist-high walls and you'll think, oh well, I know what's going to happen here. Doom was like the original Doom was like the opposite of that. It would spring about a million monsters on you when you would least expect it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the Doom rule of convenience. Nothing in Doom is ever that convenient. There's a blue key here in a large room that doesn't seem to have anything else in it. Well, shit.
Yeah, and then it'd be okay a few times just to lure you into a false sense of security, and then bam, lights go out.
Yeah.
You're dead.
Mm-hmm. That's something I kind of wish we'd go back to in a lot of game philosophy. That was that's one reason I've always liked the Uncharted games, honestly, and why I liked Uncharted 4 this year is because that's a game, no matter where you are, you're kind of covered by weird architecture on all sides and just ruins you're exploring. So,
shall
like,
we get back to that later? Because I've played Uncharted 3 now, Jay.
Oh, good. All right, we'll come back to that then, because I am very interested to have that conversation with you. Awesome.
What else have you been playing?
Honestly, so, like, the BioShock, the first BioShock, I am at the point of, I'm like, two-thirds of the way through that now, without spoiling that. Other than that, it really, like, more Overwatch, like, I honestly will hop into a game of Overwatch every couple of nights, just real briefly. Like, it's been a lot of just brief bouts of multiplayer things in my house, been Mario Kart, been Smash Brothers. I picked up Rob in Smash Brothers for no real reason. Other than that, honestly, not a lot I've been playing. I'm just getting really hyped for the new Pokemon to come out next month because it's me, and of course I am. Sun and Moon are kind of going to probably be what I mainly play over the last leg of 2016. And that even comes down to, you know, I will be continuing to not really do a lot of writing for Hey Poor Player for reasons I can talk about more at the end of the show. But I am going to be coming back to review Sun and Moon, so you can expect that in late November when those launch. But yeah, other than that, I have really not been playing anything right now other than the game of get good grades in school and run a goddamn newspaper.
What about you, Jonathan?
What have I? Well, I'm glad you asked, you see, I finally finished the Nathan Drake trilogy.
Yes.
So I finished second half of Uncharted 2, which I was about halfway through last time I was on the podcast. And yep. I finished Uncharted 3 as well. So I'm eager to talk about that. I've got to say, just to vagify any spoilers, yell spoiler alert if you're about spoiler to discuss alert! Anything like that. But there we go, in that exact voice as well.
It has to be exactly like this every time. Hello, it's me, the spoiler ghost.
Ooh. I'm going to spoil it for you.
It's
I'm
me,
the spoiler ghost.
The spoiler
hey
Muppets.
Guys.
Yeah, spoiler.
Anyway.
But anyway, I kind of
new character
thought,
just in time for a...
I kind of thought they
Halloween.
Were going to kill off a few more characters. I mean, I'm amazed that some of these characters have stayed alive so long. Particularly, okay, spoiler alert.
Spoiler
sure,
alert.
Go for it. We've spoiled enough games on this show before. So, it's fine.
So I was positive Sully was going to die in Uncharted
in
3. Okay, yeah. This is what they're leading to. It's like Drake's finally taken it too far. He's dragged Sully to the ends of the earth. He's finally going to pay the piper. But it was just a fake out. It was literally all a dream. It was all a dream. God damn it. And I just like, okay. So I'm thinking probably something horrible is going to happen in Uncharted 4, but don't tell me if it does.
I'll say this in I guess semi defense of that. Like to me, and you know, obviously, like we've talked about this before, Uncharted 4 is games about, you know, taking some of the gameplay ideas of like Tomb Raider and the spirit of Indiana Jones, basically. At its core level, that's kind of what it's melted down to. And I think in that sense, not killing off a lot of characters makes more sense than killing off a lot of characters would, honestly. But that is the one case where I completely agree with you. And that's why personally I'm not... Gameplay-wise, 3 is fine. Story-wise, I thought it just kind of lost its legs a little bit near the end when what feels like some really strong momentum leading towards Sully's death just does not peter out that way at all.
I was also I found the villain in Uncharted 2 was a lot better than the kind of the villain in 3. In 3 it was kind of like this Talbot guy, he's just a dick really. That's all we really know about him. He's just a complete dick.
Yeah.
Like, you even try and save his girlfriend, his boss, his love. Well, he seems to be really freaked out about when she dies, though. He's like, no! You know.
Yeah, that's the one, yeah.
Even though you try and help her, he still tries to kill you anyway. I mean, he's just a dick. There's no explanation for it.
Well, yeah, and he's not the only villain. You're talking about, when you talk about his boss, Catherine Marlowe, was that her name?
Yeah, yeah, it's Marlowe and Talbot, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, like, Marlowe...
Who is Catherine Marlowe? How does she have hundreds of goons working for her? What's the deal?
See, that's the thing, and that's where I agree with you, too, is Marlowe, to me, through most of it, seemed like the much more interesting villain, and then they kind of just do that with her and make Talbot the main antagonist for the sort of the last act of the game, or however long it is. And, it just feels like an odd bait and switch, sort of. I would agree with you there as well, honestly. I personally didn't find the main antagonist of 2 to be at all particularly interesting either. If we're talking about what's his name, Navarro, or was that?
I don't think he was particularly interesting.
Zarovich.
But it wasn't. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really it wasn't a bait and switch thing. You know, you knew this.
Yeah,
he's this kind of hardcore mercenary leader. He's a complete arsehole. But Talbot, it's like, I mean, it's just he's another arsehole, but you don't.
Yeah.
Know anything else about him, and I just kind of that bothered me. But otherwise, you know, amazing game, great. The gameplay, of course, was amazing.
Yeah.
But I think the story could have been
a
bit bolder. on the whole.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Three story feels like they're, three story feels a little oddly balanced sometimes.
Good popcorn flick on the whole. But anyway, also, what else? Oh, yes. Also, I've been doing a lot of spreadsheets, sorting out the site's
fun
finances and coding.
The best game
my
of them all.
Video game.
Yeah, this is what's so funny. Like, so often I just say, "Yeah, I'm sorry, I've got no time for video games right now. I'm running a video game site."
This is my second. I used to work for Gamer Syndrome, and I was actually like the reviews editor there, and it was the same thing where people, you know, you tell your friends or whatever, they're like, "Wow, you get paid to play video games," and it's like. I mean, first, yeah, but, like, it is a job.
Yeah, I mean, you get paid to play video games, but you have to play them very quickly, and then you have to write a certain number of words on them, and you have to do it by a deadline, or you're in trouble.
And you can't play the games you want to play, like, so, you know, what I've been playing, not much that is fun, because I've mostly been playing whatever, you know, review code Francis has to hand out, and so it's been some... shit, mostly.
I've
dig through some shit.
I played a game for review that was called Office Freakout that... Yeah, no, I'm ready to... This is all I have to talk about, is complaining about... Yeah, I played a game for review called Office Freakout, and you know those Flash games where you destroy an office? It's like, kill the boss, or something like that?
Yeah,
it's that with a Steam release for some reason. And it is... Do you like left-clicking? Because that's all you do. You left-click to punch. There's some enemies, but you just punch them. There's keys that you get by punching them. It's just a workout for your right index finger. And that was, it was the second assignment I got, and it was like,
I'll tell you
what,
you know you're in line for a promotion in the future if Francis is giving you a lot of shit to review, because...
No, I'm not...
You're going to wade through a mountain of shit before you can get to the top.
No, I'm not complaining about the work. I'm complaining about the game. It was weird, though. It was a little weird with Office Freakout, because, like... The voice acting in it was actually pretty good, especially for an indie game, and, like, the graphics were nice, and there were some cool little touches, like, one of the weapons was the Office Space Red Stapler, which I thought was kind of funny.
Okay, that's cool.
And, like, the music switched to a more upbeat, like, electronic version of the same song when you went into rage mode, like... It's interesting, because sometimes you see games, especially in the indie space, that are a great idea... executed poorly. It was interesting with Office Freakout because it was executed really well. Like, it's clear somebody really cared about this game, but the core gameplay was not fun because it was just clicking with no strategy at all. Like, so I almost felt bad tearing it apart until the game crashed behind a loading screen and I did not realize because the loading screens were just that long and deleted all my progress. And then I was like, okay, we're done. Time to write.
One of the first games I got given to review was a game called Pongo, and this game, it was barely finished. Like, half the power-ups, you could just walk right through them. You wouldn't pick them up, you just walk right through them, because there was no hit detection on them. And you get stuck on ledges. The music was all public domain music. I found out later looking through the YouTube sort of public domain kind of music archives. That was all the music. Right. It was from YouTube's public domain archives. I mean, when you killed a boss, it just disappears. I see one boss, right? I jumped on top of its head. I shot it. I looked down and I shot it in the head about 50 times. And it just disappeared. Just disappeared, like it had never been there. And I was just okay, right, I think this is going to be a one star, I think.
Oh. Oh. That reminds me of the one...
Yeah,
if I can... Oh my god. I'm sorry, go ahead, die.
Okay, sure. Yeah. Yeah, for Gamer Syndrome, the most negative review I've ever written so far was for my old job at Gamer Syndrome when I got to review FNAF World. You guys probably heard about this. It was the RPG based off Five Nights at Freddy's. I mean, I was the reviews editor, so I didn't have to ask nobody for nothing, but like I actually took the FNAF World code specifically because I like the Five Nights at Freddy's games, and I really like turn-based RPGs, so I was like, I will, you know, there's some people who will like just crap on this because they don't like Five Nights at Freddy's. Like, I figured I would give it the fairest shot.
Sure.
And that game was garbage.
Yeah.
That game was the absolute pits. Yeah. That's the worst, is the not the worst game I've ever played, but it's the worst game I've ever played for review. So, even basic things. Did either of you happen to play this special turd?
I don't think so, no.
I'm trying to remember.
I think that the scent.
Jonathan,
the
do you remember if anyone reviewed it for us? Because I know our own.
Yeah, so imagine a turn-based RPG.
I know our own Jack Hills is probably the biggest Five Nights at Freddy's inclined human being on the site, and he, I don't think, even wanted anything to do with it. He just took one look at it and was like, oh, no, this is one too far for me.
Yeah, no, so imagine a turn-based RPG where you don't know what any of the abilities do. You just see the names of the abilities that will be something clever like Cogwheel or Birthday Party, and literally does not tell you what they do.
God Jesus. Damn it. Oh dear. Yeah, that doesn't sound very intuitive.
Basic things like that. So you didn't know what any of the abilities do, and so like you're looking through the menu trying to figure out what it does, and then you get attacked because you find out it's not actually totally turn-based, it's more like active time battles. So while you're trying to figure out what the hell any of the abilities do, you're gonna get hit. And they wanted the interface to be more streamlined, so that's why they didn't have ability descriptions, and they also went ahead and just streamlined things like health bars and mana bars and like basic shit you need to know right out. And yet, despite this, the game was not actually challenging at all, because all of the characters, you basically seem to have, like, effectively infinite mana, and all of the characters had one move that was clearly vastly superior. So the game was just, you get a character, you try all the random-ass moves until you find the one that's super good, and then you just spam that in every battle forever. So it was simultaneously incredibly unintuitive and frustrating, and basically impossible to lose. Like, no challenge, no strategy, just mash, mash, mash.
So it's easy to win as long as you don't mind winning one of the worst things you've ever played.
The worst games ever.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Talking of the worst games ever, I'm actually halfway through the documentary about the E.T. burial. Familiar with that? Another funny thing.
Yeah,
you know, Nolan Bushnell, the founder of Atari, he follows me on Twitter. I was like, holy shit, Nolan Bushnell follows me on Twitter. Fuck, shit. Ah.
Yeah.
And then
hello.
He follows 50,000 other people. Oh well.
So you're his favorite though.
He
sure.
Still counts.
Subscribes to the you know, a penny for a pound kind of Twitter following strategy. You follow me, I'll follow you kind of thing. I followed him back because, you know, it's Nolan Bushnell.
Absolutely.
But anyway, yeah.
But you were watching the documentary.
Yes, I was watching the documentary. Yeah. And it's quite interesting because, like, they're talking about how they have to be really careful about it because the games, where they're buried is also where, like, kind of toxic waste is buried and, like, radioactive stuff and diseased pigs, and so they have to dig in the right spot or else the environmental agency will come and sort of shut them down. So it's quite a lot of, I mean I know how it ends, but still, yeah, it's good at sort of building suspense.
Goodness. Yeah, I gotta
but,
check that out.
Okay,
point.
I think we've got a bit disorganized. You were saying, Jay?
That's Oh, I was going to say on that note, didn't Jake? They just, I thought they just made a sequel to the, well, can you guys hear me?
Sorry about that, folks. I don't know if I'll be able to seamlessly edit that out of the podcast, but as Jay continues to disappear, Marty McFly style.
God, it really is. It really is like I'm just fading away into the ether. Yeah, no, that's what music breaks are for. You can like play the Ghostbusters theme and have sounds of me screaming in the background. It'll be fine.
Nice, nice. All right, so through the like crackle of the void fish, we heard you saying something about Indie Game, the movie.
Oh yeah, no, I was gonna say on the same note of movies that Jonathan had been talking about, of that Atari documentary. You know, people who remember Indie Game, the movie coming out a few years ago now, may know that they actually made sort of a follow-up sequel to it that just recently came out that's not really getting any attention. Now that I'm talking about it, I'm realizing I forget the name, but if you go on Netflix, you'll see it. It's up there. It's like under the same auspice as Indie Game the Movie. If you just look that up, you'll also find this. It's sort of like a checkup sequel they made, you know, chronicling, oh, it's 5 years later or however long it's been since Indie Game the Movie came out. Here's where all these developers are at sort of since then. And it's interesting to see that. I kind of would love to have a world where we get more frequent, interesting video game documentaries. King of Kong was really great a few years ago.
Talking of King of Kong, have you seen Man vs. Snake?
Man vs. what?
Man vs. Snake.
I have not.
No.
It's kind of like the spiritual sequel to King of Kong. It just came on Netflix. Same kind of thing. It's like back in the 80s. There's this guy who got the highest score ever on Nibbler, and to do it, he needed to stay up for 40 hours straight. So he was just standing at that arcade machine for 40 hours, and it's the damnedest thing I've ever seen. And then, like, I think it was about a year later, some Italian guy broke his record, and he was just heartbroken for the next sort of 25 years. And then, like, at 41 years of age, he decides to go for the record again.
Oh my god.
And it's just... It's the most... It sounds almost too mad to be true, but it really is. And it's got, like, this other guy who's a bit insane who also wants the record, and he's cheating to win, or at least we think he's cheating. And, of course, Billy Mitchell gets in there as well, because, you know, Billy Mitchell just likes to stick his oar in everywhere. And
he just showed up
so
outside
cool.
one day.
Yeah, that's he awesome. Does. That's pretty much what he does.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Can I help?
He's
I have nothing going on this weekend. Can I hang out here?
He's like, he's calling the guy up as he's just about to break the record, and he's saying, "Hey, it's Billy Mitchell here. I'm just saying, you know, I just wanted to inspire you with my voice because I'm Billy Mitchell and I'm awesome." And he's like, "Oh, I'm about to pass out from lack of sleep. Not now, Billy. Fuck off."
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
It is amazing. Movie.
Maybe the real
Netflix.
Billy Mitchell was the friends we made along the way, huh?
Exactly.
Everyone who's got Netflix, watch Man vs. Snake. It's great.
Oh, man. That, I gotta check that out sometime. That sounds really neat.
I was really worried initially because I don't like snakes. I thought it was going to actually be Man vs. Snake.
Yeah. Like, what, are you watching a lot of Animal Planet lately, Jonathan?
Yeah, apparently.
There is a show on Animal Planet called Animal Fight Night that is goddamn amazing.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's kind of the epitome of the American sort of, like, nature documentary filmmaking.
Is it like the nature documentary version of Deadliest Warrior?
Yeah,
kind of. It's
Do the American
they don't actually make animals fight. It's not like cockfighting or anything. It's literally just like footage of animals fighting for various reasons. So I mean, it's almost always like two males fighting over a female. But it's just actual nature footage.
Just
but
like
it's really interesting because you can see things like two giraffes fighting, which is them trying to club each other with their necks.
Mm-hmm.
Which is exactly as amazing as the mental image you have right now.
Oh, it's hilarious, yeah.
Yeah.
When they get, like, tangled up.
Sometimes they kind of do, yeah.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, or hippopotamuses, or the slave maker. I learned about the slave maker ant, and now I can't sleep anymore, because it's literally an ant that, so because ants are all about pheromones, it's literally an ant that can kill the queen, and then, bites the head off in such a way that it starts exuding pheromones as though it is the queen, and then
it starts
producing these babies that are zombie versions of whatever ant it actually took over that will slowly kill the real ants it took over until it's all slave maker ants.
Holy shit. Nature's terrifying.
Nature's the worst. Thank God we're all video game nerds living inside where we will never have to worry about it.
Thank God we never leave our houses anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just got to make sure not to drop too much junk food on the floor or, you know, an ant colony. There we go. Nerds, keep your rooms tidy. There we go. Special advisory. Anyway, but where were we on the people, what people were playing?
I don't know. What else had you been playing, bud? Because you sort of started talking about your amazing roll of shitty games you've been playing. I would love to hear more.
I don't even know if they're interesting enough to be like... okay, one game I did play, I got a review up of yesterday, that is actually good, is called The Metronomicon. And I guess it's less fun that it's good. But so it is a rhythm game and an RPG. Mostly it's just a rhythm game. It's not like... I was expecting something like Crypt of the Necrodancer, right? If you guys have played that.
Absolutely.
Which is sort of a more clever hybrid of both. Metronomicon is not so much that. Arrows fall from the screen and you perform and you like push the arrows in a specific order with a controller or your arrow keys or it is actually dance pad compatible, but I don't have a dance pad. if you complete, you know, if you get enough right notes in a short period, then that character performs an ability, and it's sort of the basic RPG abilities of like attack or heal or buff or debuff. But it's actually, it is basically just a rhythm game. Like, you don't even win by killing a set number of monsters per level. You win by getting to the end of the song with a specific score. But it really is very fun, because, like, the RPG mechanics, it's kind of dumbed down, but I actually like that, because it, like, makes it actually streamlined, as opposed to what we were talking about earlier with FNAF World. Like, it makes it something that is short and quick and fun to play. Like just play over and over again. It's definitely one of those like just one more level type games.
Yeah, definitely. That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was a very fun little surprise.
That's fantastic. Yeah, you mentioned Crypt of the Necrodancer. That was honestly one of my favorite games of last year, bar very few. It was gonna be that for most of the year. Then Undertale came out, and I was like, ah, shit, Undertale's perfect.
Yes, Undertale was so good.
Undertale's a perfect game, but I loved Crypt of the Necrodancer. One of the reasons I really liked your Doom video is because I actually come from a very like musical background and family, and so I think about music and games a lot. And as soon as that game came down the pipe, Frank immediately shot me like, "Hey, you just need to watch the trailer for this and understand it because you will love this." And I have been meaning to check it out, and this is sort of the last word to reassure me that I should. So I probably will.
Yeah. No. It's awesome, man. It's got some problems. It does. I think it's actually, and this is not a complaint we have about games often, but I actually think it's a little too long. The gameplay doesn't have a ton of variety to it. You'll enjoy it because you'll be playing it in shorter bursts. Like many things, it is not great when you plow through the entire thing to get a review out as timely a fashion as possible.
God. Yeah. It's always amazing to hear, and this is, we were talking about this earlier, it's always amazing to hear when like someone at like IGN or, you know, something like that talks about that on a podcast or whatever, about how grueling that can be. I remember on Podcast Beyond at IGN, they talked about Bloodborne when that came out last year, and how they had like a brand new hire review that as his first review and have to sit and play that game for 40 hours in the space of like 3 days.
I've done that before.
Yeah. Oh, I know, but just with Bloodborne as your first game, something that inherently difficult as a friggin' Souls game for your first thing.
The first game I ever had to review for an old site called Awesome Games, which is now Sumonix, which is now not as popular as it once was, shall we say. Mm-hmm. It was Payday 2. And we were playing it. I was playing it like I think about a week before release. So it's a multiplayer game basically. Mm-hmm. And the only other people who are playing it in the world are other games journalists a couple of testers.
Yeah,
and that's it. Yeah. There are five other people playing it in the whole world. Mm-hmm. And I remember I had to get a review out on that in like for 3 or 4 days. I actually met some people from Polygon, and I met the deputy editor of Eurogamer. So that
was awesome. Yeah, I remember last year hearing that problem with Splatoon a lot with early reviews. People were just like, well, this would be great if there were more than like a couple dozen people playing this game, period, yet. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's funny. Goodness. But yeah, I'm sorry to detract from the original topic there. What else have you been enjoying, if there's anything else on your docket there?
I mean, that's it for things that will be interesting to talk about. I played a game called Smash and Grab that was just okay. In my free time, I've been playing some Dawn of War. I don't know if either of you guys are familiar with that, kind of an older game.
A little bit. Like aware of it, honestly, but I've never really
hopped into myself. Me play that for ages.
Yeah, Warhammer, 40K, Dawn of War, Soulstorm, specifically. Mm-hmm. It's just a fun... It's an interesting RTS that's not like other RTSs, and I go back to it every so often for fun, but...
Brilliant. Oh, yeah. I just remembered actually one other thing that I not super recently have been playing, but did since the last podcast, if I can mention it. Back beginning of September, the last review I actually wrote was for a small indie game called Hue, H-U-E, that I wanted to briefly mention. It's it's basically like a color-based platformer is how I would describe it. Basically, you know, you're running around what is at first this completely monochromatic world, and you get the ability to call up like a color wheel with your little right analog stick. And at first you just get the color blue, but over the course of the game you collect 10 different colors. Whatever color you choose on that stick, the background of the world will turn that color. Like, everything will become whatever color you've chosen. And so what they do with that is they create objects in the world that will be different colors, you know, of the colors on your wheel. So you'll have to platform and, like, change colors mid-jump to make this brick appear and this brick disappear. Or you'll be, like, running up a slope and different colored boulders will be coming down at you. And you have to, like, oh, an orange boulder's coming up, make everything orange so it's not there anymore. Oh, there's a blue one, make everything blue so it's not there anymore. But now the orange one is again. Like, it's a lot of really fun technical play with how you can... Basically just using different layers of making things appear and disappear. That's essentially what the game is in terms of how you're interacting with the environment. It's that running and jumping. But it expands on, you know, how it does that every time you get another color. And it gives the developers more of a chance to make things a little bit more complex, and does so at a really steady pace that's really fun. It's about 4.5 hours long, 5 hours long, something like that. And it's a really fun time. So you should check out Hue. It's on PS4, I believe also Xbox One. I know it's on PC as well. And that is a cool little indie gem that's worth checking out that not a lot of people really played, I don't think.
Nice.
Yeah.
Let's give it a look.
Yeah. That was a neat one.
Oh, can I okay. drop one more game I've been playing in?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, one game I've actually reviewed... I took a quick break from, you know, all the spreadsheeting and website designing to review a game, you know, once in a while.
Yeah.
Just as a break. there's a game called Diaries of a Spaceport Janitor.
I was actually really curious to hear your thoughts on this. Yeah.
Yes, well, if you want to hear my thoughts on it, you can read the review. Turn your ad blocker off, please. We need money. Seriously. Anyway. But
Reading is old news, old man. Yeah. Nobody wants to do that anymore. Audio's where it's at.
Only audios, YouTube, and vaping. That's where it's at.
Yeah, one of these things is not.
Skateboarding's
like
not a crime.
Old man. We're gonna teach this town to dance. Footloose.
Why aren't you going to vote for Trump, old man?
Jonathan, I was in a production of Footloose when I was 13. That's the real punchline to all that.
Anyway.
I looked like a potato. Go ahead.
I can believe it. So Spaceport Janitor, basically it's what's called an anti-adventure game. You know how in RPGs, basically you'll quaff about 100 potions and you'll just chuck them away and you'll chuck away all the crap, you know, you don't need anymore? Diaries of a Spaceport Janitor is about a person who has to pick all that crap up. You are this janitor in this spaceport, and everywhere around you find like empty potion bottles, like adventurers needed kind of leaflets that have been discarded, like quest done. They just chuck them away, and basically you have to sort of you just just to afford enough food to get through the day, you just have to like go around picking up all this crap that adventurers have left behind. But occasionally, they'll have thrown away something quite valuable, and if you look really hard around the market, you'll find someone who really needs that piece of crap. So it's just, it's really kind of weird and atmospheric. It's like, you know, Mos Eisley Spaceport from the first Star Wars film?
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like being lost in Mos Eisley Spaceport. It's just like all these weird aliens just speaking these weird languages, and you've got no idea who they are or where you're going or what's going on. It's just sort of oddly beautiful in that way. And it also looks like the original... It looks like, you know, Grandia for the PS1, where it's kind of got a mix of 2D sprites and 3D graphics. It kind of looks like that, except if you're tripping on magic mushrooms. It's just, everything's just this mad kind of visceral mass of colour. And it's just, it's quite unlike anything else I've ever played before, and perhaps I will ever play again. Wow. And for that reason alone, I would recommend, you know, if you're curious, I'd recommend giving it a go.
Cool.
Have you, have either of you ever played Viscera Space, what was it? Viscera Space Cleanup Detail?
Oh, I've got that actually, but I haven't played it.
I mean, it's a very similar idea, it sounds like.
Less bloody, though, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, Viscera Space... Jesus, I should look up the actual name of this.
Viscera Space
like a goddamn
Jesus.
Professional. Viscera Space Jesus.
My favorite kind of each of those words.
Vasectomy Spice is a game about... This sort of cleanup detail is basically the same sort of game. You're a janitor on a spaceship where a huge... It's more playing off of kind of Doom, or more specifically, which I wonder how I heard of it. But it's specifically you're a space station. You're a janitor on a space station after a huge massacre has happened, and the hero has saved the day, and he left a huge mess, and you have to clean up all the blood and guts and stuff.
That's great.
There's not a ton to it. I don't know if this differs from the game you were talking about, Jonathan. It doesn't. There's not a ton to it, like, story-wise. It's more kind of just sort of an atmospheric game where you try to clean things up. But it's a very fun little idea. And you can do it in co-op, which is weird, because it's like one person controls a mop and one person controls a bucket or something. It's, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we need to let's play that shit right now.
That sounds really fun, actually. That sounds really fun. I like games like that where, you know, you got that setup of, oh, someone did something amazing, you have to clean it up. I always really wanted a game where you, like, play as Jimmy Olsen covering Superman doing a crazy battle. Like, it's a photography game where there is a crazy superhero battle happening in the city and you just have to cover it for the paper.
Oh, like Pokemon Snap, but with...
Basically, Superman. Pokemon yeah. Snap, but with the Justice League fighting whoever they fight. I don't know DC Comics that well. You know, whatever you could do with that. Have it
Each
be,
other,
you know,
recently.
Yeah. Have it be... Yeah, recently. fighting the box office, one could say. But yeah, no, you could do a lot of funny stuff with that. I always enjoy games where you are very much not what the main conflict is. That just makes things a little bit more interesting, almost. Goodness.
Yeah, I think it can be the sort of thing that is challenging to do well. As with a lot of meta stories, like, we're seeing more and more games, I think, that, like, know they are games. And sometimes it works really well, as with, like, Undertale, obviously.
Yes.
We mentioned that does a fantastic job of that sort of meta breaking the fourth wall.
Really
Pony
clever,
Island
yeah.
is another excellent, excellent example. But then you get things like Super Hot, I felt was a much weaker execution of that. Yeah, it seems like it's something that's becoming more and more popular. So we'll see if it still stays a fresh and interesting concept or not.
Definitely. That sort of meta humor is something that's a little bit more in fashion lately. Hello, Deadpool. Actually, hey, there was a Deadpool game a couple years ago. That was all about just being as meta humorous as possible. Yeah. That sort of self-awareness is pretty interesting.
Weird thing about Deadpool is that Deadpool is self-aware that he's kind of like in a work of fiction that no one else is.
And I know that's why some people love Deadpool. Personally, that's why I've never really been able to get into it. Because he almost feels like a superhero that was conceived for a one-off joke, and then next thing you know, he's been around for decades of comics and other media, and now he's getting huge. I don't know.
I liked the Deadpool movie and some of the comics.
I liked most comics.
They're very hit and miss.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say my favorite part of the Deadpool movie was honestly the opening credits with God's perfect idiots. Just the names he gives everyone is perfect. Yeah.
And the writers being the real heroes here, I'm sure all three of us appreciated that.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
You know, just turn to whoever's sitting next to you in the theater and being like, I'm a writer too!
I knew that! It me.
Hey guys,
yes,
I'm
a writer. You can see from my leather elbow patches. Thank you very much.
You can tell by
empty wallet.
You can tell by the cavernous bags under my eyes.
I reviewed Office Freakout. That basically makes me Hemingway.
You can see from this massive student debt I haven't repaid. Thank you. I'm a writer.
Little known fact, Jonathan takes his financial returns to every movie theater to show people
He has one of those little fold-out things that people put, like, baby pictures in, but instead of that, it's just pictures of his bank account statement.
Yeah, basically.
This was back when I had $100 one month.
That was a good day.
That was a good day.
It was better times.
And then I got hungry, and it all went downhill from there. God, that's funny.
My biggest problem with the Deadpool movie was that it was two movies, one of which was the action comedy I actually wanted and paid to see, and one of which was this unnecessarily gritty origin story that I felt like I'd seen 100 times before.
And unnecessarily long, I would argue.
Yeah, it wasn't necessary. Like, and I've argued this point with some of the people I went to see the movie with. They're like, but I didn't know how Deadpool gets his powers. It's like, who cares?
I think it's relevant. I just thought they spent way too much time on it. I think you could have cut out about half of that origin story and it would have been fine.
I'm just tired of origin stories.
Like, and that's fair,
as a concept, as a construct. Like, there's so many superhero movies and TV shows and stories and what have you now. We're flooded with them. I no longer care how whoever is in this movie, like, got their super strength or whatever, right? Like, I'm down with the idea of superheroes having super strength. That's actually one of my favorite things about the Netflix shows, the Marvel Netflix shows, of which Luke Cage was the most recent, is that they are very much, usually the origin story is like a throwaway line. Like, for Jessica Jones, it was literally just, she was like, I haven't always had my powers, but there was an accident when I was younger. And that's it, just an accident. Yeah. And that's fine.
Yeah,
I don't
and
care.
They
have super strength, great.
Yeah, and they hint at it a little more later on, but like they don't make that a whole half of the season, exactly. Like, it's just a little moment here and there, and it's just not the focus of it. If anything, that show is more, this is me focusing on Jessica Jones, because it's honestly my favorite, personally, of that bunch. Honestly, like, I think that season that we have of Jessica Jones is more Kilgrave's origin story than anything else.
Yeah.
They focus a lot more time on his, which is a really cool perspective to take in that kind of story, is let's just focus a lot more on the villain's origin than the hero's, if anything.
Yeah, I finished up Luke Cage yesterday, and it is very excellent. I think it's more consistent than Jessica Jones. For me personally, I felt like Jessica Jones had some high points that were the best of, like, any of the shows, but then it also had some low points, like Kilgrave being captured for the 5,000th time and escaping for the 5,000th time. Like,
That's fair.
I also felt like it could have benefited from being a little shorter, like losing a couple episodes, so there was one capture and release kind of a thing. But anyway, so like in Luke Cage, Luke Cage is much more of a police drama than the other two, because there's a character, Detective Misty Knight, who was apparently in the comics, and she's here now, and she's a police detective. But the police spend basically no time, like, wondering what Luke Cage is or who Luke Cage is.
Yeah, they just accepted it at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Like, once, after they see him getting shot and the bullets bouncing off him, they have a conversation about, okay, so he's one of them. And then that's it. They don't have to spend the rest of it going, like, so many police and so many superhero movies, like, what? How? It
what?
Must have been a mirage or something. Yeah. A city mirage. What
and
is a superpower?
And then they spend, like, the next half of the movie trying to kind of catch him because they see him as a threat or a vigilante or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Ugh,
yeah,
yeah. There's our origin movie. Get it out the way.
Yeah, exactly. It just I think that's the best thing about, like, the shared universes that Marvel has created and DC is trying badly to create, is the fact that we don't have to have the origins and the, like, what is a superhero. We can just move on with the actually interesting part of the story, which is why it annoys me that Marvel makes so many origin stories. Another Spider-Man movie where he's in high school.
I think...
Spoiler alert! If Uncle Ben's there at the beginning of the movie, he won't be at the end.
Yeah. I think in that particular case, and correct me if you know something I don't on this, but I thought I heard in this case that Spider-Man Homecoming is specifically not going to be an origin story, but just a standalone movie about him after he first becomes Spider-Man. I could be wrong about
God,
that.
God, I hope so.
Yeah, that'll be really neat. That's what we need. If anything, and I notoriously on this show disliked Batman versus Superman, and I stand by that completely. But one thing I will say in favor of that movie is I did kind of like that they just brushed through Batman's origin in the opening of the movie. And even Wonder Woman is just sort of in it, and they don't spend a million years asking her, where are you from? Who are you? What are you? They sort of acknowledge, no, there's not really time for that right now. We have shit going on. We have a bad movie to be in.
They do still have to show the scene of Batman watching his parents get killed.
Yeah.
For, like,
yeah.
That's what? At least the third time on film.
Yeah.
Right?
Probably four. Yeah, yeah, third. Yeah, yeah, I think it would be worse if they spend the first entire act of the movie on that. Like, it's just one brief scene and you're done. I thought that was, like, excusable, at least. Like,
yeah.
I have many problems with Batman versus Superman, enough to fill a goddamn book, in fact, but that was a lesser one for me, I would admit.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly hope Spider-Man Homecoming opens with Peter Parker walking out and being like, hey, I'm Peter Parker. In this one, we're going with machines, not just the webs come out of my hands. And
that was
the story where Uncle Ben died, and we're good to go. Okay, y'all know this.
Yeah.
And then just the rest of the movie doesn't even acknowledge it. Like, just...
just go. Yeah.
Just, yeah, tell us whatever checkboxes this particular iteration is going with.
Yeah. Goodness. Yeah, it's interesting. It is funny, isn't it, that, like, the Marvel Cinematic Universe project was such a giant, ambitious thing that I never thought would get off the ground when I first heard those rumors of it back in the day. But, like, it did, but if anything, that's just desensitized us to superhero origin stories. We don't want them anymore. Like,
exactly.
That's why you get stuff like in Age of Ultron, you have Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch just kind of being in it. Like, they didn't want to make more origin stories. They just kind of threw them in there. Same with Hawkeye and Black Widow, even. They just sort of emerge into the story when they're needed, and then they're there. Which kind of works sometimes.
Black Panther and Spider-Man in Civil War.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious about the Black Panther movie for those same reasons, actually. Like, is that going to be an origin story? Do they need one, really, in his case? Yeah, that'll be quite interesting. I'm going to guess probably not. Like, I would guess Black Panther is going to take place after Civil War did, because otherwise that's going to be a kind of confusing bit of continuity for some people, but we'll see.
I legitimately do not care anymore. Even if it's a hero whose powers I don't know. Like, I didn't know Deadpool's origins.
Yeah,
but
me neither.
Super don't care. I just need to know, like... he has a healing factor, he has strength, whatever. Okay, good to go.
I don't know any of the Defenders' origins. I did not know who Jessica Jones was before the
Neither
Netflix show got announced.
Yeah.
I knew who Daredevil was. I knew who all three of the other ones were. I know, like, you know, they showed that trailer for Iron Fist very recently. I know absolutely nothing about Iron Fist except what his costume looks like in, like, the original comics. All I know about him. But just give me the story. Just hop into it. Let's go. Come on.
Because is there any superhero origin that is going to be interesting at this point? Like, you know, whether he got blasted by radiation or was the result of some government experiment or had a truck full of chemicals fall on him, or there is, like, there is no story that we are not going to have heard many times before.
I think the best you could do, the
90s cartoon for Fantastic Four made the origin story interesting. They told the entire thing in the opening song. On an outer space adventure, they got hit by cosmic rays. Now the Four are faint forever into most fantastic ways. And, you know, they just sing it. And then by the end of the intro, you've got the entire origin story. You're good to go.
That's what they should do with superhero movies now. Just have a minute long musical intros at the beginning.
That would be fucking great.
Just like the Black Panther movie opens with him beating up guys. It's like Black Panther.
Yeah, exactly.
Voodoo magic. I don't know.
God. Fantastic Four is a hilarious example too. Did either of you guys see the Fantastic Four movie that if you can even call that a movie that came out last year?
Nope. I saw the Rotten Tomatoes rating for Fantastic Four.
Holy. You know,
I found something very interesting about the Fantastic Four movies. Mm-hmm. The last three Fantastic Four movies, they only made them so they could keep the licensing on it. So they made one in 1994, very low budget, kind of produced by Roger Corman, who's famous for very low budget films.
Yep.
Another one in 2005 and another one in 2015. They were only made because it was like in 10-year increments as they're about to lose the license. So they made three bad films. So they can keep a license to make a good film. How crazy is that?
Film that they will never make. Same thing with the last two Spider-Man movies.
God, yeah. Oh my God. Well, yeah. The entirety of the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man movies is so weird to me because they were genuinely trying to make that its own cinematic universe. Like, I remember hearing that at some point, that the quote-unquote Spider-Verse, you know, the Sony Cinematic Universe, whatever they wanted it to be, they wanted to make that its own big thing. Like, I think they had plans for, like, a Venom movie or something like that, you know.
Well, you know what Sony's trying to do now, right?
I don't offhand, actually. I haven't heard much about...
Ghostbusters was going to be their next universe. Hmm. That's why they made a Ghost Corps company.
That makes sense.
They made a specific company branch to make a new Ghostbusters movie. That was going to be their, like... They wanted that to be their action franchise that would rival... You know, Marvel or Star Wars or DC or whatever.
Honestly, I kind of like the new Ghostbusters. I didn't hate it.
I really liked the new Ghostbusters. Yeah. I'm actually a big, big fan.
I think that's like Ghostbusters is one of the many things from that era that if they had tried to do like a quote unquote gritty reboot, it would have failed because what you're rebooting or remaking, whatever you want to call it, is something that's just inherently really frickin' silly. Like, Ghostbusters is silly as hell. That's why those movies worked, and that's why the new one works.
That's the thing. A lot of complaints people... It really was just kind of four, you know, awesome comedians from the day, and they improvised a lot of dialogue, and they just kind of had fun. And it's like, that's what Ghostbusters is. It's four comedians who, like, have good chemistry, having fun in front of a camera.
Yeah.
No, but here's the thing. I loved the new Ghostbusters movie. Mm-hmm. I really hope it gets a sequel, but that is not a cinematic universe.
Yeah.
That is an improv comedy with some CGI thrown in for flavor. Like,
I mean, hell, the Transformers movies are now like officially being acknowledged, like internally at least, as the quote-unquote Transformers cinematic universe. At that point... That's just a series of movies. You're not combining multiple canons.
It's a series of very bad movies.
I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, and I in that case, like, I and this is me as someone who doesn't know a ton about Transformers, but I know plenty of people who do more than me. There's enough different Transformers series in their history between, like, all the different lines of everything they've come up with. I could see kind of, like, excusing it because of that. Like, oh, we're combining this... continuity and this whole like reboot they did in the 90s or whatever they want to call it. Even so, it just feels like an absolute stretch.
It's the absolute worst of both worlds. I mean, they don't focus long enough on the Transformers for us to care about them, and the humans are all kind of obnoxious, so we don't really care about them. And then they cap it all off with like an hour-long slow motion explosion fest, at which point we're all bored to tears. And then they just keep making movies and printing money, and we keep going seeing them because we're stupid, apparently. That's the world we live in.
Do you guys know anyone who went and saw the last Transformers movie? Because I genuinely don't. Someone must have.
A lot of people must have.
I don't know anyone, but somebody did.
Yeah, apparently. Who? Oh, God, write to us. Like, if you watch the Transformers movies when each new one comes out, seriously, like, this isn't me trying to find someone to make fun of. Let us know. I'm really curious. Like, That's just one of those series that I don't understand who is watching these. Ugh.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what, though? Maybe what they're going to do is they're going to make it a whole Michael Bay, like, cinematic universe. So at the end of the next Transformers movie, in a post-credit sequence, the two cops from Bad Boys will come in.
Oh, man.
That would be okay.
Hey, you know
that.
God. Actually, yeah, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the Transformers, and Bad Boys, be good.
I'd
be good in that.
Oh man, people like those new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movies, though, right? I am not a Ninja Turtle person either, really, so I haven't seen them. But I've been hearing that last one was pretty good.
The Maybe? Second one was fun.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Fun.
There was no substance. It was fun.
It's about mutant turtles. It's fine. There's no substance.
It was a solid, 90 minutes to 2 hours of entertainment.
Fair.
Hey, did they have a fight on a stage while Vanilla Ice was performing?
Oh man!
If not, then I don't want to see it. I don't care.
If only.
Secret of the Ooze.
Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah, you know what's actually pretty good? Did either of you see that new Goosebumps movie that came out last year?
No, I did not.
I just randomly decided to watch it. It was on Netflix, and so I just decided to watch it recently. That is actually a really good movie. Like, that was actually a really, really genuinely effective comedy, honestly. Jack Black plays R.L. Stein as, like, this character who, wrote all these books that, he wrote and made money off of, but, like, the original copies that he has were actually created to, like, seal away things that he was magically creating due to some supernatural power. And it's just the goofiest thing that works way better than it should. It's a genuinely funny comedy. Like, that was a weird surprise that I expected to be a complete cash-in that probably was intended to be, but was really good. R.L. Stein makes a cameo, too, which is great. Nice. He just appears for half a second. Like, oh, hello. You're there in the background. Looks like a slightly more overweight Neil Gaiman.
Yeah. While we're talking about surprises, I guess I can... Have either of you guys seen or heard of that Storks movie that is currently out?
Yeah. Yeah, it's made by the Lego movie guys.
Yeah. Yeah. It is actually surprisingly really, really good.
That's what I was hoping,
I went there at the end of my... after midterms were over, just because, I needed to do something to, de-stress.
To not and die.
And it was so funny. I was, crying laughing. And I didn't realize what an all-star cast it has. It has, Kelsey Grammer.
Really?
Yeah.
How did he get
Kelsey
there?
Kelsey Grammer just absolutely hamming it up as the villain, and it is so amazing.
That's delightful.
Key and Peele are in it.
Oh, no kidding.
I'm fans of them.
Yeah. I love Key and Peele.
And they voice a pack of wolves. So
that's
the two of them, they voice 50 characters.
That's awesome. I did not know that was them. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's the sort of thing where, it's not really deep. It is a kids' animated movie.
Obviously.
It's not even as deep as the Lego movie, which was surprisingly sort of insightful towards the end.
Yeah.
But it is really, really, really funny, and I highly recommend it for that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's really cool. The Lego movie, one, Legos were, my ideal favorite toy growing up, but two, that movie, the word heartfelt gets thrown around a lot when talking about, kids and family media. I feel like the message at the end of the Lego movie is just one of the most genuinely heartfelt things I've seen in something for that audience in a really long time. I really loved the Lego movie.
Yeah, definitely. The Lego movie is one of my all-time favorite films for sure. For equal parts, because of the story behind it, because of the message, because of how well it manages to pull off its meta-narrative, which is something we were talking about earlier, the two stories at once.
Yeah.
But also just for the, unapologetically funny stuff, like Superman and... being stalked by Green Lantern and
hey man, can I hang out with you?
Gandalf and Dumbledore fist bumping.
And then there's the 80s spaceman.
80s space guy.
I love that because it's so true. I had those little 80s, you know, because I'm a bit older than probably you two. But I had those little 80s spacemen and those little helmets at the bottom. They would always crack in the middle.
My dad had one of those with the helmet cracked in the exact same spot.
I have an older cousin who, once he found out, like when I was little, that I was into Legos, he gave me a bunch of old castle sets and a bunch of old space sets he had. So I have like 20 of those, like blue ones, red ones, white ones, like all different colors that all have that. None of those helmets are not cracked. It's great. It's beautiful. And even then, just the good cop, bad cop character in that. There's a lot to love in that movie.
And the fact that it was Liam again, similar to Storks, like, a ridiculously all-star cast for that one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. What's his... Will Arnett as Batman was incredible.
Yes.
Will I love the comeback Will Arnett's been making lately between that and, like, BoJack Horseman.
BoJack Horseman, yes.
BoJack is one of my favorite TV shows, period, at this point, I think. That's really good. You know what? Sure. You mentioned Dumbledore a minute ago. Have you guys seen the newest trailer for the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them movie? The sort of Harry Potter spin-off project that's happening?
No, I have not.
So, like, I feel like I've been talking to people about this a lot because Harry Potter and the Cursed Child came out this year, which I was not a fan of that. The resurgence that Harry Potter's starting to have, because that is really interesting because, you know, like a lot of people know, J.K. Rowling made Pottermore a few years ago, which was this effort to like have this big online thing where she would continue writing more into the Harry Potter lore universe. At first, I thought it was a great idea. Over time, frankly, I've come to like it a lot less as a project. And like the reason for that is that like it and you know, this might be a little harsh, but it starts to feel disingenuous a little bit. When you've got all these things that begin to feel like, and this is also true with her just sort of randomly making abstract statements on like her Twitter and stuff about things that she just has decided are canon for certain characters. Like sometimes it starts to feel like she just had a cool dream one night and woke up going, oh, here's a background of the divination department at Hogwarts that I'm going to write and make canon today.
She's turning into George Lucas.
That is exactly the parallel I made when I was talking to someone about this the other day. Is exactly George Lucas remaking them or just re-editing those original Star Wars movies. And like at a certain point, you know, if you want to write more in a universe you've created, that's fantastic. But if you're gonna do it properly, if that makes any sense. Like even Harry Potter and the Cursed Child.
The thing is that like if you create a universe and one of the fundamental parts of it is that it's magical, it's mystical, it's strange, it's different, and then you start demystifying it by kind of like, you know, telling everyone's story, going over all the details. That's kind of what happened with Star Wars. And that might be what's happening with what you're talking about.
I think it kind of is.
Definitely I'm with you where some of the stuff that she, like, just throws out randomly, it's, like, clearly not very well thought out. Like, obviously it was a big deal. Her saying on Twitter that Dumbledore is gay.
Well, that was... See,
I have no I have no problem with Dumbledore being gay. Let's be absolutely 100% clear on that.
Yeah.
My problem is that it's not representation to just say that he's gay afterwards and never have him... even make reference to it at all in the books. Like,
because
a lot of people probably, you know, obviously we are like knee deep in nerd culture. A lot of people probably don't even know that she said that or aren't even like aware of that. And you could just read the books and not know. Like, you don't, I feel like you don't really get points for that, for just being afterwards like, oh yeah, this character who sexuality was never ever addressed as gay. That makes me progressive. Not really.
By the same token, like, you know, it's another thing if, you know, not every character's sexuality will be relevant to their arc in the story. Like, absolutely. Dumbledore's sexuality was by no means relevant to any of
his
character in those books. But, like, it would be one thing, like you just said, if she had said it was canon, like, either during the publication of those books or maybe right after Deathly Hallows or the sixth one where, you know, spoiler, Dumbledore dies, you know, if it had come out then. But, like, It's another thing. If I don't know if either of you guys at all watched Legend of Korra, the sort of sequel series to Avatar: The Last Airbender. You know, that show kind of famously ends with a canonized gay relationship between two of the main characters, between Korra and Asami. And right after that show ended, like I think the day after, one of the creators on Twitter or on one of the social media outlets, it might have been Tumblr, made a post talking about, oh yeah, you know, Asami and Korra aren't the only LGBT characters we sort of had in mind. Here's a couple other characters who we always sort of agree, just in like tossing around random backstory ideas, are probably, you know, gay, or this character is bisexual, whatever. But it just never really became relevant. Like, one of Aang's other children is gay. I honestly forget who. But they were, a couple other characters were canonized as having other sexualities. And it's like, okay, the show just ended. So, like, yeah, I will buy that you guys probably had this in your head. It just was never relevant. But
right. Besides which, you know, with The Legend of Korra, they were working under Cartoon Network.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's only... Oh, no, that was Nickelodeon? Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Nonetheless, they were working for Nickelodeon, and, like, you know, they... I'm sure that there was only so much they were allowed to do, right?
Yeah, I mean... Yeah.
Like, when the creators of Gravity Falls wanted to have just a lesbian couple in the background, not even doing anything, and Disney said no. Whereas J.K. Rowling, you know, by the time, like... after I'd say about the third or fourth Harry Potter book was out, could do whatever she wanted.
Mm-hmm. That's what's been fascinating, and this is us going off a complete tangent. I'm going to tie this back in one second, but one of the reasons I really like following the show Steven Universe on Cartoon Network is because of how much that show has been allowed to do. That, like in terms of representation and ways of talking about relationships, like I really love what that show's doing in terms of talking, like addressing that stuff for younger audiences, just because nothing's really been able to do it before that in the same way and to the same extent to the same audience that Steven Universe is doing. So I think that's neat. But
agree. I don't actually enjoy Steven Universe very much as a show, just like the plot doesn't interest me that much.
And
but I'm
fair,
very glad that it exists.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Yeah. I have a weird thing where I just enjoy keeping up with, like, what, you know, kids shows today, like, versus when I was growing up, whatever. I think that's an interesting thing to keep track of a little bit. But back to the original point, like my whole thing with J.K. Rowling and with the George Lucas comparison, and I love that this is a tangent we're going off on here, because we never talk, like, it's weird to talk about books in a video game podcast, but sure, why not?
Right.
Like, J.K. Rowling, so...
No rules, just right.
Yeah. So Harry Potter and the Cursed Child came out earlier this year. For those who don't know, that was sort of intended to be the quote-unquote eighth main story, where it's about one of Harry's kids. It's the script to a play that is happening in the UK. It was not written by J.K. Rowling. It was written by these two playwright guys, sort of supervised by her, but sort of not. And frankly, as a result, I really did not like it at all. Characters were completely misrepresented. It didn't really make sense where some characters were coming from as they had aged. Harry is a absurdly different version of himself than he was in any of the original books. There's there's loose threads that don't make sense. Like, you know, I guess spoilers. Harry Potter basically had, you know, there's two characters who have a kid who Harry is named Godfather for. Those two characters die. Where is Teddy in any part of The Cursed Child? He's nowhere. He is not in The Cursed Child, because I guess they just found that to be too hard. But on the flip side, those Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them movies are coming out, and J.K. Rowling is writing those movies. She's writing them. Yeah. She's being consulted with the director. You know, she is making sure that everything is in line with what she wanted for the canon as that. So I see that as more like in line of, all right, I would much sooner accept this as a continuation of the world you created than Pottermore or something like Cursed Child, because Cursed Child just feels like published fan fiction.
I don't think the comparison between J.K. Rowling and George Lucas is entirely fair. Like, I get what you're saying in the context, but, like, George Lucas is a terrible writer, and he's always been, you know, even since episode five, you guys know, of course, the famous line, "I love you, I know," right?
Yeah.
It's iconic. It's one of the best moments in a Star Wars movie.
Mm-hmm.
Originally, and you can look this up, it was going to be this long-ass, flowery speech that George Lucas wanted Han to give as he was descending into the kryptonite.
Oh, I didn't
know this. Harrison Ford just could not deliver it with any level of convincingness. And so finally he ad-libbed the "I know" thing, and everyone on the cast loved it. The director loved it. George Lucas was like, episode 5 is not good because of George Lucas. It's definitely, it's good because of the director, like 100%.
Who never gets credit to the point where I don't remember his name off the top of my head right now. And I feel really bad for that because he's a great director. Whatever his name is. No, he's terrible saying that.
It's true. So, George Lucas has never been a particularly good writer. He has really, really good ideas. Aesthetic design and stuff.
Definitely. He's good at creating the universe.
Whereas J.K. Rowling, of course, is... she is definitely a good writer. So I wonder how much of the stuff that is bad is more about, Warner Brothers with the movies and whoever her publisher is, desperately trying to get more money from Harry Potter and until she finally, greenlit the play and... is writing the movies, and maybe that's been some of the stuff with Pottermore, was they were like, please, just if you have any ideas, post them. You don't actually have to write them. You don't have to make them good. Just don't let the Harry Potter content stop, because we're making so much money off of it.
It must be quite kind of scary as a writer to, be completely defined by something, and you might feel afraid to try something new.
Yeah.
And you might feel kind of obligated to this massive, hungry, starving fan base.
Mm-hmm.
Get to write what's really in your heart.
Yeah, and whatever you do write after that, if it's something unrelated, might not get the attention it deserves. There's all sorts of trouble there. Yeah.
Less Rowling wanting to edit her old work, although, still salty about the Dumbledore thing. But other than that, it might be her less wanting to edit her own work and more her being forced to write more after the story she wanted to tell, after the complete good story of Harry Potter was over.
Yeah.
And the well has run dry.
And that stuff happens, the Hunger Games books, the two sequels to the Hunger Games, those are not at all the stories that that author Suzanne Collins wanted to write, but she was getting so much pressure from the publisher to finish them faster and just get them done and get them out, because it was starting to get big. Even after the first Hunger Games, I think it was before the second one had been released, that talks about making a movie and starting a big franchise with it had started. And, think whatever you will of the movies. I think those movies have some of the weirdest ups and downs of any YA book adaptations we've seen in a little bit. But, that was a big problem with those, is she really wasn't able to continue the canon the way she wanted to continue it.
That's what I like about George R. R. Martin. People are like, fucking hurry up, write faster. It's like, I'll finish it when I can, all right?
Yeah, I'll finish it when it's fucking done. Yeah.
Yeah, fuck off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, that's affecting the TV show in some different ways now that they're out of books to adapt. But it's, the TV show is still living on through that, too. It's fine.
It's ready when it's ready.
It's the same thing as, this is a weird example, but when they made, I always love the example of when they made a Fullmetal Alchemist anime, when Fullmetal Alchemist, the manga, was not nearly done enough to provide adequate catch-up. So halfway through the original Fullmetal Alchemist anime, it completely becomes a different story than what the comics wind up being. That's why they made a second show. Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood is the show that is the adaptation of the comics. And the original 2003 show, half of it, the first half of it is stuff from the comics. The other half is just shit that the TV writers made up because there wasn't anything else to adapt. It's a weird thing that you
throw
fall
another
into
hot
there.
Springs episode in there,
and
a beach one, and a Test of Courage one. Fill up.
It's not
time.
That kind of anime. No, I'm kidding. But it all comes down to this is weird. But I'm gonna quote John Green, of all fucking people, who's very much a YA literature icon, and who I have varying opinions of his stuff and his personality, but his last book, The Fault in Our Stars, has this really good line. It's a book about these two kids who sort of bond over a book. The author, which they spend a lot of time bonding over, questions they have about the writing of it. They get an opportunity to meet the author of the book. So they take this big trip to meet this guy who wrote this book. And they just start sort of saying, they start asking him all these questions, what happened to this character after the end? Did this person die? Oh, what'd you do? What'd this person do? What happened with this whole thing? And the author just says, hey, stop. You want me to tell you what happened? Here, I will just make up some crap off the top of my head because it doesn't matter. Like, whatever I tell you, whatever answer I give you, it's not... It doesn't matter. If I had more story, I would have put it in the story.
Yeah.
If I or Nothing. I would have written a sequel or something. I didn't do either of those things. There's no what happens next for these characters. That's where their story ends. It begins and it ends. You can come up with other stuff if you want, and that's fine, but you have to understand that that's on you and not on me.
It's kind of like the movie Misery. Have you seen that?
Yeah. That's another good example of that. Absolutely.
Yes, crazed fan kidnaps writer and forces him to write an ending she likes.
Yeah. It's the exact same kind of thing. Or, you know, it's even the same as, like, a lot of fan fiction or, like, alternate reality fan fiction. Like, going back to Star Wars, there is a line of comics I really like that, they take
Infinities?
Is that what it is? Where they take each of the original movies and change something in the plot of them?
Yes.
So like
they're
the
Disney Infinities, and the premise is they change one thing and how the universe could have been different. So the one for Episode 4, for example, Luke doesn't blow up the Death Star.
Yeah.
And how would things have been different if the Empire had gone into the Battle of Hoth and everything else and still had the Death Star intact?
Yeah. Yeah, or my favorite is actually the Episode 5 one where Luke freezes to death on Hoth. And so Leia has to go be trained to be a Jedi, and she eventually is the one to face Vader and Palpatine. It's nuts.
Yeah.
It's great. It's so good. Yeah, like those, or even, I'm a huge fan of the original, this is going back to anime, I'm a really huge fan of the original Neon Genesis Evangelion. The newer Evangelion movies, like, they're a little weird, and they're a little overly franchisey, but they're still that same kind of thing, where they take the original backbone of what Evangelion's about, they take the setup of it, they change, like, two little things that start off very small, like, that series of movies. The first movie is basically a recreation of the first few episodes of the show, but with very small changes here and there. And then as time goes on, those changes kind of bloom out into very different things, and by the third movie, it is a completely different story. It's really interesting watching sort of recreation stories happen like that, where they're like, all right, so this is how this story goes, but what if it wasn't? Just what if this didn't happen?
The original series is very much a look into the dark, disturbed world of Hideki Anno's mind. I am a fucked up person. This series I make will show you how fucked up I am.
And that series is nuts for that. Yeah,
very much the movie is. It's a lot more. Mm-hmm. It's a lot more positive on the whole. You know, Shinji's a lot more well adjusted. A lot more of a helpful, outgoing young man.
Yeah, he develops a little faster. He changes a little more rapidly. That's exactly, an interesting part of him.
It's like
and Rey is just a more fully developed character in some really interesting Rey ways.
Exactly,
yeah.
And it's like the first series is basically Hideki Anno saying, "Yeah, I'm a really fucked up young man," and the movies is like him saying, "You know what? I've grown up a bit. I've married. I've kind of got a handle on my life now." Here's a reimagining of what my
Here's a sort of what if scenario that radically changes some parts of this story, and that's awesome. That's really cool. On a side note, Hideki Anno is actually directed that new Godzilla movie that's coming out, Shin Godzilla. Yeah. I don't know like much of anything about Godzilla lore. I've seen a few here and there. I'm not hugely invested in it. I'm very invested in seeing this new Godzilla. Just from the trailers, it has an oddly like live action Evangelion vibe, just in terms of the way things are shot with Godzilla in the city and just everything. Oh my goodness. Even the way music is used in it is very Hideki Anno. But that's
everyone
completely
said,
beside the point.
Everyone said
anyway.
That like Pacific Rim was really inspired by Evangelion.
Oh yeah,
but it wasn't really. I mean, it did have superficial similarities.
It was influenced. Like the director has said. Like Del Toro has said he really liked Evangelion and Gundam and all these other sort of things like that.
But the thing is, I mean, I think it had that superficial similarity, but I mean,
wasn't
nearly as kind of dark and messed up and weird and mad as Evangelion was. One thing I did want to, have you seen the trailer for the new Ghost in the Shell?
I have not gotten around to doing it. I can't get myself to watch it. And that's me as someone who isn't even like, I actually have like that special edition Blu-ray copy of the original Ghost in the Shell movie. I really like that movie. I didn't immediately get angry when I heard about the remake or anything, or I'm sorry, remake, the live action one, but I just, I don't know. Something about it is not making me interested.
It's like, I watched the trailer and it actually wasn't that bad. It looked quite interesting. It's kind of got quite, it's got that same sort of rather somber feel, slightly ponderous feel to it that the original movie had, which I quite like.
Very much so.
And of course Scarlett Johansson, she's just great in everything. So
sure.
That's the thing. When I saw just the incredibly, incredibly negative reaction to Ghostbusters, it kind of just made me think a bit like, maybe I'm too possessive about franchises sometimes, you know. It's okay. It's like the Ghostbusters thing. It's not the same universe. It's a parallel universe. It's a reimagining. Yeah. It doesn't affect or change or taint any of the stuff from the original movies at all. And it's the same with this. It's like whatever happens in this, it's its own thing. It's a parallel universe. It's not really a big deal. You know, I'm interested to see what their take on it is, you know?
Exactly. Like anytime I hear anyone claim that a fictional work is quote unquote raping their childhood, I want to like just sit them down in a dark room and let them really think about their values in life for a minute.
Yeah.
Like, is that too harsh? Like I really do. Because obviously we all have things that we grew up with or that, you know, we're around at the right time in our lives. Like, back to books for a second. I really love his Dark Materials trilogy by Philip Pullman. The Golden Compass, those books are... I read those right when I was sort of coming to age, where I was like 12 or so, and it was just the perfect time for me to read those books. And they've always stuck with me to the point where they made a Golden Compass movie in 2009, I want to say, that just completely...
So what it did, it was
not the most unfeeling. It was an okay adaptation. It cut out the last chapter of the book, which is... the twist at the end of the book that makes you immediately rethink the entire nature of the universe that takes place in and want the next book all the more. It just cuts that out in order to give it a happy ending because it came out around Christmas and the studio wanted a nice happy Christmas flick. Like, that is on record the reason that happened. Yeah. And so, you know, obviously I got very angry about it, but I'm not about to like hunt down the director of the movie on Google Maps and burn his house down. Like, yeah, there comes
a
point.
Send him a bunch of anonymous hate on Twitter.
Yeah, like, I've been through a couple bad concerts from bands I liked before that. I'm not gonna send death threats to those bands for giving me shitty concerts. Like,
right. Like, even if the new Ghostbusters have been terrible, which I think if people actually step back from it, it's not at all. But even if the new Ghostbusters had been, like, the worst film ever, the old Ghostbusters would still be there.
Yeah,
exactly.
I think sometimes we all need someone to remind us that a new thing coming along and presenting change to a classic thing that you loved does not delete the existence of the classic thing. Like, Teen Titans Go is a shitty cartoon. The original Teen Titans is still there. You know, like, it's also, you can order that on Amazon, the whole box set, for like probably $30. It will always be there. Batman versus Superman, not a great comic book movie. You can buy the Christopher Nolan Batman movies. You can buy the Tim Burton ones. You can get the old Batman cartoons or the old 60s Batman show. All those other ones still exist. It's okay. Mm-hmm.
It may be sort of a weird thing to say on a, you know, on a podcast for a video game website with three people who do so professionally, but sometimes we definitely take media a little too seriously.
Sure, definitely. Oh, absolutely.
Exactly. I just think at the end of the day, we've got to say, we could have differences of opinion on works of fiction, but if you're starting to, again, threaten people or say, you know, people shouldn't have the right to say certain things about works of fiction, you got to take a step back and say, what the fuck is wrong with me?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, talking of like subtle changes in adaptations, you guys watched the Watchmen movie?
Oh yeah. I'm familiar.
It's interesting because I didn't read the original comic books, but the ending. spoiler alert. The ending is
big spoiler alert.
They blame all the fucked up shit that's happened on Dr. Manhattan, and so he has to bugger off basically. And I thought, okay, fair enough. In the comics, what they do is they blame it all on aliens.
Yes.
And I was like, you know what? I think the movie one actually makes a lot more sense. It makes more sense.
Oh, most definitely. That's one of the few points where I would agree with you. That's also, funnily enough, one of the few Zack Snyder movies that I actually kind of like for that. I'm not a Zack Snyder fan, just as a director. I don't aesthetically like the way he does his films. But that was one thing where I was like, oh, you had the balls to make that change. Good on you. You did good there. I didn't even like the rest of your movie all that consistently, but that's
wasn't it written by David Hayter as well?
I believe so.
Alan Moore. The comic is Alan Moore.
I think the adaptation was written by David Hayter. I believe so.
That's so cool.
Interesting. Yeah.
David Solid Snake Hayter?
Yes, yeah. David. That's the very same. Solid Snake. Yeah, he wrote it.
I did not know that.
He wrote the movie.
I actually like the comics quite a bit better than the movie. But I would agree with you, Jay, that the Watchmen is the one Zack Snyder movie that I would be willing to watch, basically. that change for sure does make it does make it a lot more personal in a lot of ways. But I think it's also the comic is interesting because the thing about it being aliens is kind of goofy, but it means that you can see Dr. Manhattan, the like good guy, all-American hero, sort of react to that and see how he becomes complicit in the lie, as opposed to him just being this character who continues to be just the good guy and kind of gets pushed into exile. That was not the change that I had a problem with. Basically, I just like the comic books better because they go into more detail on things that you obviously can't do in a 2-hour movie.
Yeah,
as with so many adaptations.
Yeah, that's with so many adaptations. I mean, going back to Harry Potter, look at the later Harry Potter movies. When you get into like Goblet of Fire onward, you have the ones where J.K. Rowling barely had an editor and so was able to just go as in depth as she wanted. Then you have the movies where you can't do that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a good conversation.
Yeah, there we go. We were worried about this episode.
We've got a ton of content.
You know?
Not out of like evaluation of, oh yeah, I's gonna suck. But you know, just it's a shift of leadership. It's a shift of whatever. Who knows how it'll go?
Right.
Yeah. We got some good stuff going on here.
Funnily enough, this episode, if I get it out on Tuesday, which I'm planning to, because that's sort of the traditional time, is actually going to be exactly 2 months after the last episode.
Oh, neat. That's cool.
Yeah,
that's fine with me.
Because it came out on August 11th. It's going to be October 11th. So
great.
So that's fun.
Great. And I think episode 70, is that what this is?
Yeah, it's episode 70. Yeah. So it's a round number to start on too. It's a fresh,
that's great,
beautiful new start for Hey Poor Podcast 2.0.
Hell yeah.
Which is apparently a movie and book podcast this time. Hey, we thought it was about video games.
Hey,
we're a movie and book site now.
If you scroll down a little bit on the homepage,
that is very true.
You'll notice the media reviews.
Yeah,
I was going to mention this. Our very own Bethany Meadows has written a review on the first episode of Luke Cage.
Oh, Luke Cage.
Yeah.
I read she did an excellent job. I was hoping to have her on today to talk about it, but that is something she is going to be for sure confirmed on the podcast next week, and I'm sure there will be lots of talking about that. So
looking forward to it.
If you like Luke Cage, stick around for 1 week and then dump it.
Then just burn us in the face of the internet. Then talk about how he raped your childhood and just leave.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
No, it's true. We've been surprisingly reasonable. I don't think anybody will want to hear that fuck you guys for liking the Watchmen movie. Fuck you.
Oh man. We've never actually I've gone on rants on this show about why I really genuinely don't like Ocarina of Time, one of the most universally held sacred games of all time, and we still haven't received any hugely negative comments. I think we're just golden for some reason. We're just beautiful. We can't be touched. Here at the Hate Poor Podcast.
When we finally get anonymous hate on Twitter, that's when we'll know we've made it.
I can't wait.
I don't get
when somebody
don't get
tries to leak
hate.
My nudes.
Yeah, I don't get anonymous hate on Twitter, but I've definitely gotten hate on Twitter for other things.
I think I wrote an article about how I kind of wanted Resident Evil to kind of. I quite liked the actual Resident Evil 4, 5, 6. I quite liked the direction.
Oh, yeah, I remember this. Yeah,
I think some guys, you fucking idiot. You fucking
Holy
stupid
Christ.
Asshole. And I'm like, dude, why are you getting so angry? You like different things about Resident Evil than I do. So I got a right to be fucking angry.
Yeah.
Calm down.
I remember that. That was such an amazing firefight to watch. It does happen, though. Like, back when that Majora's Mask remake on 3DS got announced, I wrote an opinion piece on why I thought just, you know, and this is, I will probably misrepresent my own words here a little bit, but, like, it was something to the effect of, like, I was kind of worried that the reasons it was being made reflected badly on what Nintendo is and isn't listening to when it comes to the voices of their fan base, and why I thought, you know, why I was a little worried that maybe it was an omen of negative things to come. There's still some stuff in there that maybe holds true if you're able to dig in the archives and find that piece. And all the comments I got were, I think this is wrong because I like Majora's Mask. You can like Majora's Mask. I respect that game a lot for what it did at the time. That's not my argument at all, Broseph. Like, that is miles from what I'm saying. It's really funny how that happens sometimes. Hey, to our beautiful listeners, who I hope are above that, if you know, whatever opinion you have on anything we write at Hey Poor Player, absolutely tell us. But, you know, just, like, read the whole article
first, I guess.
Please
don't insult us.
You're typing a sentence that includes the words kill and yourself, or maybe just take a breather.
If you're typing a sentence that includes rape, death,
racial slurs, sexuality-based slurs, anything
just think, do I really want to... This is another human being I'm talking to.
Is this the hill I want to die on?
Yeah.
Whether or not Majora's Mask is good.
Which was not in question to begin with.
Yeah, first of all, it sounds like you weren't even going against the idea in your article. And second of all, if you like Majora's Mask, it's not like that's a hard opinion to find people who agree with.
Yeah.
You know?
God. Oh my goodness.
I read this article once. It was this guy who's basically talking about how he doesn't like Naughty Dog very much. Mm-hmm. And, oh, Jesus Christ.
I think I remember this article.
About 100 people saying, yo, you fucking motherfucker!
Yeah, it was just an op-ed about why he just legitimately doesn't think Uncharted is a good series, right? I think that was specifically
He was really, really gentle about it. He was like, it's not really my thing, but I see why people would like it. I mean, this is good, but it's not my thing, dude. It's not my bag. But people are still fucking angry. It was very kind. I wrote to him, it's like, dude, just kind of don't be afraid of all these people, just say what you think, you know?
Sometimes you gotta just remember that, like,
whatever you say, people are gonna get mad at you, so you may as well just come out with it, you know?
Sometimes
you know it's... what? Actually, I rescind what Jay said earlier. If you are one of our listeners and you are super angry, get angry. Make all of your friends get angry and comment on our site.
Oh, sure.
And, like, because every time you share our article with some caption like, look at this person who's raping my childhood, I get paid.
Yeah, we're getting read more. Like, absolutely. And, yeah, it's good to remind yourself, too, that, like, people are just more likely to comment that they're angry about something than to comment just to say you did a good job. Like,
true.
I forget who I'm quoting here, but it's from some podcast I listened to recently. No cop has ever pulled anyone over to congratulate them on doing a great job driving. Ta-da! Anyway.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Good.
Good stuff.
Should we wrap up?
Yeah. We've had our rant.
Sure, let's wrap it up.
A bit of rant.
Absolutely ridiculous.
I'm really happy this is the episode I sort of go off on. I think this is a good episode to talk about books. Hell yeah. Oh no.
Yeah.
God.
Haha! You said it was good. I have your power now.
it's like Highlander.
This was my origin story the whole time.
Oh, fuck!
I missed the Highlander comment, Johnson, for a moment. That was underappreciated. It's very good. The quickening.
Oh my god, the quickening of eye.
Yes. Jay, where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, so like I was saying, like, this kind of marks me not completely being gone from Hey Poor Player, but sort of just taking a backseat on it because I need to focus on some other projects and just stuff in my life for a while. And, you know, obviously it's with no ill will towards a single person at HeyPoorPlayer.com. We have done, like, I cannot say enough how much amazing stuff has happened at Hey Poor Player in the 4 years since I started. Like, back in the day, it was me, Frank, Bert Hopkins, Tiger Pillow was doing stuff for us at the time. It was basically four people. And now we have, what's the count? About 25 people working for us?
Something like that.
Yeah, it is amazing. And, you know, obviously people have come and gone in that time. Like, you know, and it's been reflected on the podcast, too. We had regulars for a while who have not been on in a while, who maybe left the site due to personal reasons or disagreements. Whatever reasons, a lot of people have come and gone, and that's okay. Because through it all, we have just continued to grow and become this awesome thing that we've become. Like, it really warms my heart, and it makes me know that no matter what, no matter who leaves, no matter if I do have to leave, like, everything is going to be in good hands here at Hey Poor mm-hmm. Player. And that's magnificent. And, you know, I'll probably show up on the podcast once in a while to shout about things. I am going to be reviewing Sun and Moon in November, like I said. I'll probably show up with a random article here and there when I have the time, but it's really more just as an occasional guest thing when I can get around to it. In the meantime, though, you can always follow me on Twitter at @ExtremeSalsing. That's honestly where I'm going to be doing the most updating that. And I do have, like, a writing blog Tumblr, which is just jmpetriquin.tumblr.com. I also have been, for the last couple months, writing for The Odyssey Online, which is a really awesome site that does a lot of good writing. You can, if you just look up Jay Petriquin on The Odyssey, you'll find me there. My one for this week is actually kind of about video games, ironically. My one for next week might be about the very topic that we sort of talked about today with the whole J.K. Rowling and George Lucas comparison. That was ironically something I was sort of holding on for that, but then we got to sort of talk about it here, so that's really neat. You can find what I'm doing there. God, where else even am I? Honestly, the Twitter and the Tumblr are the main places. That's kind of where I'm living right now. And stay tuned, because I always have more... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going along on this, but I have a webcomic that started, and then my art tablet destroyed itself. It's called Black Basin, and it can be found at blackbasin.tumblr.com. I will be starting that up again soon, as soon as I have the equipment to continue drawing it again, basically. And that's me.
Okay. No Patreon or Kickstarter?
Not really, not currently. The thing with Black Basin, well, one, it's my updates are sporadic because, again, I'm still in college. And two, I'm not a trained artist. I am a writer first and an artist second. And, you know, I like to think I'm a halfway decent artist, but I am definitely one before the other. And so right now Black Basin is just kind of a way for me to continue improving and challenging my art skills. At some point there will probably be a Patreon, though. Like, that's something I've been thinking about for... once I'm a little ways farther down the line with it. So keep an eye out for that.
Okie cokie poodles.
Yeah.
Jonathan, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at JTizzlefish.
Still the best handle on Twitter. I love that one.
Yes. yes, generally, I mainly work for Hey Poor Player. You know when you're clicking on the forums... or you're going through the archive section, or you're... Just anyway, that's me. It's all me. I designed it.
It's his blood. His sweat and tears.
I spent hours and hours going through the back end and, you know, adding new
Jonathan
programs.
Jonathan Tressler is the name of
plugins.
A complicated AI we have uploaded to the Hey Poor Player website.
Oh my god.
And since Jay got so kind of emotional, let me get emotional too. It's like, I started year, I knew... very little about coding or web design or anything, but now just look at the site, look at how lovely it is.
Yeah, the complete redesign we did in the spring, that's Jonathan.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it's just bloody lovely. As for me, I just say find me on Hey Poor Player, click writers at the top, click Jonathan Trussler and read my articles. Watch my videos on YouTube and watch Coleman's new video on YouTube.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's
me.
Yeah. So I am also mostly writing for, you know, Hey Poor Player that this time. I've only been here for 2 weeks. I'm kind of part of the redesign, as I'm one of the new people who've been brought on board, I guess.
You're just a
although
baby.
I can't say find me on Hey Poor Player, Jonathan, because if you go up to the writers tab and scroll through those names, you will not find mine.
Only feeding to it. Yeah, by the end of the month, when you've reached the end of your probation, I'll put you on.
Okay. So you cannot find me on Hey Poor Player until the end of the month, but you can find me at Last Space Marine on Twitter, or if you go to the Hey Poor Player YouTube channel, that's where I'm going to be kind of focusing on video content mostly, and then a few reviews for the site proper.
And then I'm also at medium.com/@YEETZCHAK. So medium.com/@Yitzhak, which nobody knows how to spell unless I spell it out. But that is where I post a lot of old writing. So, like, if you want to see the stuff I did before, Hey Poor Player, it's all there. And it's also where I, when I write fiction, it always goes on there. So that's kind of my personal blog for writing.
Hell yeah.
Yes, hey, can I check back at the writer section in like a week or two, because I'll be adding all the new members of staff who've gotten through the initial obstacle course, you know, who've climbed the mountain, who've
we actually all have to review that shitty office freakout game, and if you can make it through that without quitting.
Even I have to do it. Even I have to do it. Otherwise, they'll delete my audio from this episode. can I real quick say, like just going back to our whole discussion of like having a new version of something coming out, not destroying the old version. The new shit, you know, from here on out, I, as the host of the Pay Poor podcast, and I have the utmost confidence in his ability and the ability of everyone else who's going to be on this show, making it awesome every episode. It's not going to be exactly the same show, right? And that's not a value judgment, positive or negative. That is just a fact of the different people will be on it. Like, and there's always been different people on it. Like, we've had different people on the show all through the years. So don't, you know, like, I'd never want to hear anyone come back and be like, oh, it feels different than when you were hosting. Of course it does. It was different than I was hosting because I are two different people. We're two entirely different letters of the alphabet, for God's sake.
Exactly.
Like, no, I like to put that out there just as like, I have nothing but respect and love for everyone on this show and everyone who will be on this show. And I'm going to keep on listening every week, and so should you if you've been keeping with us through me being the host, hell, through Frank being the host before me, through everyone else who's come on and off this show. Hey Poor Podcast, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. So tune in next week when we'll be rebranding as a furry inflation porn podcast.
No! Hey, Tiger Pillow used to be one of us. It wouldn't be the first time.
Oh, Lord Almighty. And with that, thank you, everybody.
Erase that.
You thought wrong, Jonathan. Let me send you some links later.
Oh. All right. Goodbye, everybody. Have an excellent Tuesday night.
I love you all.
Bye.